begin this morning by addressing a critical issue, and that is the maintenance and repair project on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. Citizens in Anne Arundel County, Queen Anne's County, and from across the state are frustrated and angry over the sometimes unbearable backups at the Bay Bridge. And I want people to know that I, too, am frustrated and angry. And, in fact, I'm furious about it. And let's just say that I've been, I think some people here can attest to, I've been very vocal with some of the folks throughout state government about this issue. Like everyone else, I have been demanding to know why this is happening and what can possibly be done about it. Obviously, no one likes the idea of spending hours sitting in bumper-to-bumper traffic. And the idea that this could continue for the next 2 years makes it all the more unacceptable to nearly everyone. But here are the unfortunate facts. The bridge was opened in 1952, and the last span was added in 1973. The bridges were never designed for today's volume of traffic, and nobody has come up with a solution or solved this problem for many decades. And to make matters much worse, critical maintenance and necessary repairs have been repeatedly delayed and deferred for more than a decade. That's exactly the type of deferred maintenance that all of the members of this board have been railing against for the past several years. After decades of this problem being ignored, 3 years ago, I was the first person to take action to advance the process of beginning a study for a new bridge span. Now, thankfully, although decades late, that study is currently and finally underway. But that's a potential long-term solution, and unfortunately, it does nothing to solve the immediate crisis. Delaying maintenance for more than a decade has caused tremendous safety problems. The engineers say that the deck surface on the westbound lane is severely deteriorated well beyond the end of its service life, and that it has a number of very major safety risks. In one section of the lane, 75% of the area is deteriorated. And for nearly all of that lane, half of the area is deteriorated. The condition is worsening every single day. If neglected any longer, the crisis could go from terrible and unbearable to catastrophic and life-threatening. And all of this incredible traffic that we're experiencing right now is being caused by emergency repairs to just one lane, a 20% reduction in capacity. But just imagine if it is left unaddressed and we are then forced to shut down an entire span, two or three lanes, 40 or 60% of the capacity for safety reasons. Traffic backups would double or triple what they are now. So delaying this critical safety work any longer would not only risk safety and potentially risk lives, but it would also turn the current project into an even bigger nightmare, which would take 5 years to complete and would cost the taxpayers more than eight times as much. That would obviously be even more unacceptable than the current situation. So I'm just going to be completely honest with everyone and tell you that there is no real positive solution to make these problems and the traffic backups magically disappear. It has been suggested that these critical safety issues be delayed until the peak spring and summer months when traffic levels are much higher, causing even worse traffic jams. We have a local elected official in Anne Arundel County who opposes building a new bridge, opposes fixing the existing bridge, and fantasizes about ferries that could magically transport 100,000 cars and make all of the traffic disappear. Can you imagine the days-long backups on both sides waiting for the ferry? That is not a practical or realistic solution. My most important responsibility is to the safety of Maryland citizens. And being governor sometimes means making the tough decisions, not just the popular ones. I wish that we could simply put our heads in the sand and kick the can down the road again. But not taking action, unfortunately, simply is not an option. However, I am going to take action to demand that every single effort be taken to complete this project as soon as possible. And I am directing all of the engineers and all of the experts to look at every single possible solution that is feasible. I have directed the Maryland Department of Transportation to make sure that the contractor is working 24 hours a day and that they are expediting this project. We've asked them to study solutions like faster drying concrete that could speed up the project. I'm directing that we eliminate all of the toll booths altogether and that we move fully to cashless tolling and fully electronic tolling at the Bay Bridge as soon as possible. I'm directing MDOT, SHA, and the Maryland State Police and all relevant state agencies to assist and coordinate with the MDTA and local governments in helping to move the traffic. And I've also tasked every agency and all state employees and contractors involved in this project to take every possible step to minimize its impact on citizens and to aggressively communicate the steps that are being taken. Anne Arundel County has more than 11 times the population of Queen Anne's County. And there were massive backups in Anne Arundel County in the first few weeks. To address this situation, MDTA instituted contraflow in reversed lanes on the bridge, which did relieve the traffic considerably in the population center of Anne Arundel County. However, it caused massive traffic on the shore. And so I have directed the traffic engineers and our intergovernmental team to work together with and to negotiate between these local leaders in both counties to find the statistical balance in order to share the pain and to not unfairly target one side or the other. Our administration has already held dozens and dozens of meetings with local elected leaders, school officials, small business owners, citizens, and emergency services personnel in both counties. But I have directed them to redouble their efforts and to work with local officials and to address their concerns and the concerns of residents. They will continue to reach out and to answer their questions and to listen to their concerns and their suggestions for alternatives and improvements. I have directed them to seek continued input and to aggressively welcome any constructive ideas on how to accomplish these emergency repairs more expeditiously and more efficiently. This cannot be delayed for another decade, and we cannot put Marylanders' safety at risk. But I will continue to push the entire state government to do everything possible to mitigate the pain, to shorten the time frame, and to expedite the completion of these critical safety repairs. I also want to take a moment to address another matter that this board has been working hard to address and on which all of us on this board have been in complete agreement. The five individuals who were wrongfully convicted experienced unimaginable pain and indignities while incarcerated for crimes they did not commit. All three of us have repeatedly said that they deserve to be justly compensated as they work to rebuild their lives. The legislature attempted, but has failed, to address this issue for several years. We are going to continue to push for them to finally take action on legislation which would lay out specific guidelines in the future for compensating any additional exonerees as we move forward. But these current people should not be made to wait for the legislature to return to work in January. So last month, with the unanimous support of my colleagues on this body, I directed the Board of Public Works General Counsel to prepare a memorandum of understanding with the Chief Administrative Law Judge to immediately put a process in place that will ensure fair, individualized consideration of these cases. Unfortunately, this is a very complex legal matter, and the lawyers are saying that it can't be done in the expedited time frame that the three of us would be satisfied with. It simply is going to take them more time to reach the final legal agreement. However, once again, I do not believe that these five individuals should have to wait any longer. So, over the past few weeks, my team in the governor's office has been working very closely with the treasurer's office, the comptroller's office, and the BPW staff to reach a consensus on specific guidelines which could allow us to award each of the petitioners in each of these specific five cases an agreed-upon amount of damages. We have directed the Board of Public Works advisors and legal team to immediately prepare compensation agreements for all five petitioners and to have them presented to us for action no later than the next board meeting in 2 weeks on October 30th so that we may resolve this matter and compensate these wrongfully convicted individuals. With that, I'll turn the floor over to my colleagues for any opening comments. Madam Treasurer?
Thank you, Governor. I want to thank you, the Comptroller, all the staff involved for moving this matter along. I wish it were decided today, but I think it's fine that it will be decided in 2 weeks. With under your leadership, it's many years too late, and I don't think any of us could ever imagine that we could actually compensate somebody for spending years, decades in prison when they were innocent of crime. But we are going to come to a solution, and we are going to act, and these five people will be taken care of, and I just appreciate all the work that people have been putting in. I appreciate even more the suffering and time and patience of the five gentlemen involved. And I hope we will at some point arrive at a good system for administering this sort of terrible thing. But in the meantime, take care of the people in need, and I thank you. Governor, I also thank you for what you said. It was very realistic and appropriate, I think, about the bridge. I think it's very, very well taken. I think one of the best things that a good leader can do is explain what the problem is so that we can all share it and share an understanding. I must say I have some reservation about your joke about ferries as a ferry boats, as a transportation mode. They use it in many places in the world, use ferries for commuting, including Seattle, Washington, a large fleet of publicly owned. And I do hope we actually will be looking at that. You can make it a mode of transportation that's both reliable and energy efficient and relatively non-polluting and get people to where they need to go between the shores, and I hope you are looking at that. I appreciate it. One more thing. We all read in the paper this week about the potential of climate change and the impact of climate change forcing the Naval Academy to eventually move from Annapolis. And since the waters rising are not only on the part of Annapolis where the Naval Academy is sited, that's another call to action for all the rest of us up and down this wonderful state. And I know that the greenhouse gas reduction plan is finally coming out very soon. I know that your goal of energy efficiency, I hope, is going to be reflected through more and more through the projects we see coming up at this board. And I just want once more to put this at the top of our agenda. It's something that we're not going to stop, but we can mitigate the impact, and we can work towards a resilient Maryland. And I think I'm unfortunately going to mention this very frequently.
You can mention it every meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you, Madam Treasurer. I happen to be in a great mood today. I'm very happy. The Washington Nationals are going to the World Series. So I can...
Next year will be the Orioles.
Yeah. Next year, the Orioles and the Nationals. But as the state's tax collector, I agree, and I'm happy to report this morning that there was a significant upward tick in the alcohol tax revenue after last night's game. So these sporting events are obviously very inspirational and supported by the fans, but frankly, these teams do such a great job for the state's economy, so... go Nats. I do have a couple of comments on what the governor said. I really applaud Governor Hogan, your leadership. I think you've been terrific on many, many different fronts, and I'm pleased to hear the steps that are being taken on the bridge. And I'm obviously very pleased also that the five petitioners are going to be taken care of 2 weeks from now. So I do have a statement, though, about the both of these subjects. Obviously, the bridge project is needed, and it's necessary to ensure the safety of commuters and the structural health of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. The one area which there is some disagreement is should the state continue with the project without proper traffic mitigation strategies in place, with minimal consultation from stakeholders who are directly impacted by the horrendous traffic congestion that this project is producing. I happen to agree with the thousands of residents and commuters and local elected officials and first responders and the educators and small business owners who are expressing their strong dissatisfaction about what's happening in their communities right now. I guess it comes down to whether or not we want to do this project the right way or just press on with it because it's already begun. It's like fielding a team that's not properly prepared. That's the situation that we have right now. When students are arriving to school late because buses are getting stuck in traffic, that's unacceptable. When residents in Kent Island can't go to the grocery store or visit family on the other side of the bridge or are essentially forced to stay in their homes on weekends because of the traffic congestion on Route 50 and the side streets, that's unacceptable. When emergency services can't respond to calls in a timely fashion, that's unacceptable. When small businesses are seeing decreased traffic in their stores and restaurants, that's unacceptable. Simply put, what we have right now is unacceptable. We've been fortunate that over the last 3 weeks we've experienced relatively good weather during peak travel days on Thursdays and Fridays. What happens when it rains? What happens today? Be careful as far as crossing the bridge. God forbid there's an accident on Route 50 or the bridge. I can't even imagine the traffic backups these conditions would result in. I appreciate that the Transportation Authority has apparently held meetings with local governments and issued a press release about this project back in July, but how can one seriously argue that these handful of meetings, limited outreach to the thousands of commuters and residents impacted, is sufficient for a two-year project that paralyzes communities on both sides of the bridge? We've now heard from leaders of Queen Anne's County who have unanimously opposed the use of contraflow on the westbound span until they can meet Transportation Authority. So apparently these meetings that were held prior to the project start date weren't that constructive because, in the words of one Queen Anne's commissioner, it's not the number of meetings, it's the substance of these meetings. And I couldn't agree more with the Senate Republican Whip, Steve Hershey, who said we need to broaden meaningful communication, open a dialogue to understand what's working and not working on a daily basis and come together on this. How can MDOT say that every resource at MDOT is focused on keeping the Bay Bridge as functional as possible, as Secretary Ron noted in a letter to me, when the only traffic mitigation strategies released have been doing cashless tolls, modified contraflow during peak weeks? Over the last 3 weeks, Governor, I've heard from thousands of people via Facebook, Twitter, email, and calls to my office who have shared their experiences about being stuck in this nightmare. Again, everyone agrees that the work must be done. Everyone agrees that this has to happen to ensure the safety of commuters. But this is week four of a two-year, $27 million project, which, by the way, I agree with Lieutenant Governor Rutherford, should have come before the Board of Public Works, but did not. Well, maybe that can be fixed down the road, but everyone agrees the work must be done. Everyone agrees this has to happen to ensure the safety of commuters. But it's week four of a two-year project. I honestly don't know how we can ask communities that are impacted by this to continue to be patient as MDOT proceeds with this project with virtually no traffic mitigation strategies other than what the governor just indicated today, and I totally support that. But we're playing catch-up. We should have done all of this beforehand. So I'm going to renew my call that MDOT suspend the bridge deck rehabilitation project. I'm happy to look at any safety inspection reports. I didn't realize that the bridge was in danger of failure, I guess, if we don't move forward with the repaving project. But happy to look at any safety inspection reports, Mr. Secretary, that you have, because that would be help me understand why perhaps you're insisting on moving forward. But the governor mentioned postponing this until next summer. I'm happy to postpone it until next fall, September, October. But the key is that we do the kind of preparation that the governor articulated, and he had some terrific ideas. But all of that should have been done beforehand, and none of it was. So why don't we regroup, pause, regroup, pay the, and it really was a pittance that we would have to pay for delaying this compared to the cost that you're going to see to the state's economy if we just continue to move forward. So I'm more than happy to add to the governor's list of potential traffic mitigation strategies. I support most of them. I'm just suggesting doing it on the fly, after the fact, while people are sitting there. And trust me, when these folks are sitting in traffic, the issue of whether we did some mitigation or something or doing some mitigation is not a big deal to them. They are angry. They're frustrated. And to say to them, look, guys, just because it's the bridge, you're going to have to put up with this inconvenience while we push on through. It's, well, go out on the bridge this afternoon during rush hour in the rain.
Please don't get back. We already have enough.
Yeah. So anyway, I also have to have a few comments on the five wrongfully convicted Marylanders. I really support the governor's solution that we're all going to announce, I guess, 2 weeks from now, and I totally support the treasurer's very impassioned plea to take care of these five individuals. We're talking about Jerome Johnson, Lamar Johnson, Walter Lomax, Clarence Shipley, and Hubert James Williams. Collectively, they spent 120 years behind bars, prison unfairly. Think of all the birthdays, holidays, graduations, funerals, life milestones that they missed. I can't imagine what that is like for them individually. No dollar amount can truly make up for the years of their lives that were spent in incarceration, but the very least that we can do as leaders of state government is compensate these five individuals. The plan we're adopting today is not only a traditionally a nationally driven approach, but it's also in line with what the five petitioners are seeking, compensation reflecting each of the unimaginable years they spent incarcerated for crimes they did not commit. While it's taken many months to get there, I'm delighted that we are initiating this action today to provide financial relief to five innocent Marylanders who were victims of a broken criminal justice system. May today's action by this board serve as a catalyst to a process of healing and closure for these five individuals and serve as a reminder to all of us in elected office of our responsibility to ensure that every individual is treated fairly by our laws. Governor, thank you again for your leadership on both issues that I commented on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. We'll get started with the Secretary's report.
Good morning, Governor. My pleasure, Mr. Comptroller. We have 9 items on the agenda this morning. We have one person in the audience I know can tell you about coming across the bridge on item 8. Mayor Meehan is here for the Ocean City renovations. We can take your questions on any of the items we have.
Any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Item 6 is wetlands, and that Mr. Morgante is here. That's an exciting project for Baltimore City, the Topgolf project. It's to grant a wetlands license for a living shoreline project and some fill down there. Bill, you want to introduce yourself?
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Bill Morganti, the wetlands administrator for the board. I'll get to that project in a second, but I was going to introduce just the fact that this project is one of two living shoreline projects that are before the board today. This Topgolf in Baltimore City and also the Clausen project in Crownsville. And if I could, just want to say a little bit about the significance, I think, of the Living Shoreline projects. Just to clarify, you know, Living Shorelines, it's an approach to shoreline stabilization that's really utilizing natural materials along with hard materials. So instead of just your bulkhead or just your wall, it's really introducing stone with natural materials so that there can be some ecological benefits to stabilizing this way. So along Maryland's 7,000 miles of coastline, living shoreline projects are very effective at reducing erosion, buffering floods, storing carbon, and providing habitat. The Living Shoreline Stabilization Act, enacted in 2008, recognizes that living shorelines are the preferred method of shoreline protection. So with respect to one of the two projects, I know Mr. Comptroller here interested in Topgolf, but the Clausen project, why don't we just actually at this point move ahead to your questions about Topgolf.
Yeah, no, I just I noticed that you're filling in part of the Patapsco, or allowing them to fill in part of the Patapsco River, and I guess as a mitigating factor, create new wetlands, and I just I was listening to what you had to say, but are you sure the proposed mitigation is going to satisfactorily answer all the concerns that folks may have once they see this project?
So it's true that actually the proposal from Topgolf will fill in a little more than a half acre of wetland. Also, you know, I was also concerned about that from looking at this from the very beginning. But I think that a number of factors that I've come to understand really paint a picture of the benefit that the project will actually provide, even to the ecology, more than that filling. So first off, I know that one of the, you know, most of the environmental agencies, Department of Natural Resources, Army Corps of Engineer, MDE, have really supported the project. There was one environmental agency, National Marine Fisheries, that did have comments against it. They really talked about this is valuable fish habitat. So I know that for that one issue, and even looking into the fish survey that was done by the agent, that really the results were really that there were very few species. The habitat was really, really degraded, so it really was not a significant issue with that. You know, in terms of the environmental agencies who supported it, really just this one group, National Marine Fisheries, was speaking up against it. But, you know, I feel like that's offset by the fact that four other environmental agencies really had positive things and felt like this is a good thing to move forward. In addition, it's creating living shoreline both at the Topgolf site, but also at the mitigation site for the project is Ridgely's Cove, which is right across from Topgolf. So it actually will be creating almost an acre, actually, of new wetland. So it's providing, I think, a significant environmental benefit there. I happened to visit the site last week just to really understand kind of on the ground, like, what this site's like, and was struck with, you know, having read the reports on the project, really, that, you know, this site next to the Horseshoe Casino, you know, is, yes, there are tidal wetlands there. However, it's a very degraded habitat. There's a tremendous amount of trash there. And part of the special conditions for the project really will guarantee that, along with the ecological uplift from the living shoreline and other creation of wetlands, that they actually will be maintaining even the trash that's there. So I feel like overall that's an uplift. And then lastly, I think, like, looking at the factors that we use to evaluate all these tidal wetland projects, the five factors, the ecological, the economic, the recreational, the aesthetic, the developmental, like, really looking at all those five factors in this project, it seems clear to me personally that the weight is really for this is going to be very favorable.
Well, I'm stunned that there are fish that are alive in that part of the pasture.
Only two species that they could find that are very hardy that survive in that.
No, it certainly sounds like a good project from the city's economy standpoint. And thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question about the Ocean City Convention Center.
All right, that's number eight. Mr. Rage is here from the Stadium Authority. You want to come up with the mayor? Need no introduction, but maybe you could introduce yourself anyway.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know the mayor was here with us this morning.
Governor, welcome. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, I'm Rick Meehan, the mayor of the town of Ocean City, and I'm here with the Maryland Stadium Authority for this request.
You don't need a new bridge, do you, down
no,
there?
We don't need a new bridge down there. But I appreciate all your efforts with regard to the Bay Bridge, and that's certainly a difficult problem that you all face. But public safety is the number one priority, and I think throughout the state we all recognize that. But whatever you can do to mitigate those problems that all of us are experiencing, I think would be well appreciated by all Marylanders. So thank you for your commitment to doing that. I appreciate that. I'm here to answer any questions you have about this. We're here to support the request to sell the bonds to complete phase three of the expansion of the Ocean City Convention Center. This has been 5 years in the planning, and we're here now ready to build 30,000 square feet of exhibit space. The town of Ocean City is, of course, the partner with the state of Maryland and Maryland Stadium Authority in this project, and 40% of the cost of this project will be borne by the Ocean City taxpayers. And we've already secured $15 million in bond proceeds and sold our bonds, so we're ready to move forward with the project, just awaiting approval of the sale by the Maryland Stadium Authority for the state's share of that project. It's a revenue-positive bond. The amount of estimated state new taxes is between $2.5 and $3.5 million, and the annual state debit cost is about $1.8 million. And that doesn't even include the economic benefit that this expansion will serve, not just to Ocean City, but to the state of Maryland. So I'm here to answer any questions along with the Stadium Authority today so we can get the project forward, move forward, plan to break ground, hopefully with your approval today, in April of 2020. With a completion date of December 2021.
I want to congratulate you. It's been a long time coming.
It has
been.
Thank you.
Project. A lot of us have watched it develop over decades.
Thank you.
And I think it'll make a big difference. But things have changed over decades, too. My question to you and to Stadium Authority is, now that we're building at this point, and it's such an important part of the economy, not only of Ocean City, but of the state, how do we factor in the two things that I mentioned earlier, the impact of climate change and also energy savings? I mean, it's a large edifice. It's going to have a large roof. Have you looked at solar? How is that worked into the planning now?
Well, I'm going to let them answer that, but I will say one thing, and I support your issues with regard to energy and climate change. And what we're going to continue to do is encourage people in Ocean City. We have an excellent public transportation system.
Yes, you do.
And what we continue to do is encourage those that visit the convention center, the conventioneers, to ride the bus rather than take all their individual cars. This helps eliminate a lot of the emissions that we see, you know, throughout the state there in Ocean City. We allow the conventioneers to travel and utilize the bus system for free, and that is to encourage them. So we're trying to do those type of things, not only to eliminate traffic problems, which we're all talking about today, but also to address some of those environmental issues. But I will let the Stadium Authority answer the other question.
Thank you. Terry.
And then when he's done, I also see Senator Mary Beth Carrozza in the back of the room. If he wants to come. I imagine you might be here to support this project as well. So if you want to come, happy to hear from you as well. But please, the treasurer.
Good morning. I'm Terrence McGee, and I'm the city engineer for the town of Ocean City. Madam Treasurer, in regards to your two questions, for sea level rise, Ocean City has always been very cognizant of that and climate change. And one of the things that we do townwide, not just for city government facilities, but for all new development in the town, is we require that new development now to build 3 feet above the 100-year flood elevation as determined by FEMA. We like to follow our own rules, and so the convention center new expansion will also be built at or above that minimum elevation. When you go in the convention center now, when you walk in, you'll notice that when you go to the new additions, you have to step up, and that's why. So we are very cognizant of that, and we have taken that into account in construction. Regarding energy conservation, part of this project included in the cost is actually replacing an antiquated heating and air conditioning system in the existing part of the building. So not only are we going to be increasing the efficiency with a new portion of the building, we're replacing a lot of that old inefficient equipment on the new side of the building.
Thank you. Well, I hope you will at some point look at really innovative things like solar panels and everything. Let me just say I appreciate your city and the county have been really great participants in the Sea Council and the Coast Council and in the new academy. And I thank you for encouraging your folks to participate.
Thanks.
Smart.
We do.
Council.
The mayor reminded me we do participate. Actually, we are a significant purchaser of solar power from now an off-site farm that we just did enter into an agreement with, and actually the convention center benefits from that. They are one of the facilities that are assigned to receive power from
That's
that
good.
Solar farm.
Well, I think people should hear that and know it.
Yeah, we're very proud of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, and I'm delighted to be here this morning when I saw this item was on the agenda. And I'm really here to thank everybody over the years that has been involved to get to this point. It has been a total team effort. And I can tell you, we locally are excited about it, but I want the whole state to be excited about it because this Ocean City Convention Center is a revenue generator for the state of Maryland at a very crucial time in our economy as well. So I really appreciate the item being added today, appreciate the support, and we are ready to move forward. Right, Mr. Mayor?
Right.
Any additional questions?
I just want to make sure that we're all going to be invited to the groundbreaking in April.
Yes, you will. Absolutely. Everybody will be invited.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second? 3-0. We're going to move on to the DNR real property agenda. Madam Secretary.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio, Secretary of Department of Natural Resources. We have 11 items on our real property agenda for which we are seeking approval today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions on DNR? No questions? Is there a motion on DNR?
Approved.
Second. 3-0 on DNR. We'll move on to the university system.
Good morning. Joe Evans representing the University System of Maryland. We have 6 items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
Good morning. Any questions on the university system?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on the university system.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to the Department of Transportation. Secretary Ron. Sorry, Governor. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Pete Ron. I am the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT is presenting 11 items today, withdrawing item 4RP, and I or others are available to answer questions.
I would just like to call attention to item 2C mod, which is the construction of the Masonville Dredge Material Containment Facility. And I just want to congratulate, I don't know if anybody's here, but I want to congratulate the Maryland Port Administration. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I don't really have questions. I just want to congratulate and point out the great work here for the Port Administration recently receiving the Environmental Improvement Award of Distinction for a decade of dedication from the Association of American Port Authorities for Masonville Cove, and the award recognizes the range and the impacts of the stakeholder engagement awareness and involvement achieved over the past 10 years. And I just want to thank you as Director of Development, and just wanted to call you up and give you a shout-out and thank you for the great work, and have you maybe tell us a little bit about the project.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and good morning, members of the board. Kristen Fidler, Director of the Office of Harbor Development with MDOT's Maryland Port Administration. Good morning. Thank you for having us here this morning and for your consideration of this agenda item for a construction contract to complete the third and final planned phase of the Masonville Dredge Material Containment Facility. As you mentioned, the story of Masonville Cove began as the restoration of an industrial area to create a much-needed containment facility for storage of the dredge material removed from the shipping channels in the harbor serving the Port of Baltimore. Through early and extensive stakeholder engagement and outreach, the site has grown into a nationally recognized partnership and resource connecting the city's residents to the outdoors, providing important wildlife habitat, and educating thousands of students in environmental education. So I just want to thank you again for your continued support, as well as a big thank you to our partners, really quickly, at Maryland Environmental Service for the construction, operations, and maintenance of the dredge material containment facility, and our partners at Masonville Cove. Of course, the community members in the neighboring communities, and our partners at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Aquarium, and the stellar team running the Environmental Education Center and the lab space at Masonville Cove Living Classrooms Foundation. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and thank you again.
Let me let me just thank you personally for your leadership, and please pass on to your entire team. Everybody that's been involved with you, how much we appreciate the effort.
My pleasure.
Governor, I'm just going to add that Kristen is one of the many stars that we have within the department, but she is a believer in improving the environment of Maryland and the entire bank.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
Secretary. That's why we're giving her the shout-out today, Mr. Secretary.
I appreciate the leadership of the Secretary and the Governor. Could you just comment briefly on what an unbelievable, thundering economic success the port is?
Yes, absolutely.
Since Jim White is not here.
Yes, I have many statistics I could rattle off. We are a major economic engine in the state of Maryland. We continue to rank consistently number one in the country for numerous cargoes, including automobiles, roll-on, roll-off machinery. We're number two in the export of coal. We are a nationally significant port, investing in our infrastructure to be able to handle these ultra-large container vessels. We're ready for the demand now, and we're ready for the future growth.
Excellent. Very good. Thank you so much.
Could I ask one brief question?
Absolutely.
Again, getting back to climate change,
sure.
Sea level rise, storm surge, all the rest. How is that factored into your plan for this specific project?
For this specific project, so the construction of the Masonville Dredge Material Containment
right.
Facility is critical to the long-term sustainability of the harbor channels serving the Port of Baltimore. We are required by law to have a long-term placement capacity plan, so we have to plan out at least 20 years, and Masonville and the Cox Creek Containment Facility serve that need. But really, it's incumbent on us to be looking out beyond 20 years. With increased storm surges, storm events, potentially increased sedimentation, sea level rise, and those things. So we are looking at the reuse of dredge material to protect low-lying areas of the Chesapeake Bay. That is factored into our long-term plan. With regard to the construction of this site, with the restoration of Masonville Cove, we created or enhanced several acres of tidal and non-tidal wetlands. We enhanced over 70 acres of the shoreline and the reef and the aquatic habitat associated with Masonville Cove. So all of that is part of the full package.
And I assume when you look at the new construction and its capacity, you're looking at it within the context of Maryland several decades from now.
Absolutely. How can that infrastructure that is on the water, and it has to be on the water, withstand all of these risks that we're looking at out on the horizon?
And I can't remember, have you participated with the Climate Change Commission?
The Maryland Port Administration is an active participant, not just for the dredge material containment right. facilities, but for our landside operations as well, the terminals.
Now, let me just say that I've talked to some people from other states, and for some reason their port authorities are not participating. And so I think this is an area in which Maryland is a model, I think.
We are a national model for restoring eroding islands in the bay, creating much-needed scarce remote island habitat and hundreds of acres of wetlands. So we appreciate your support and leadership in that endeavor, and we truly are an international model.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions on transportation?
Yes, I just wanted to comment on item 4. -RP. This is a retroactive grant we're giving to creating access, ingress and egress into something called the Cambridge Marketplace, LLC. What is that? That's taking an old packing house and developing it into something that is really a game changer for the city of Cambridge and also the adjacent Cannery Park, which is a whole environmental addition. So the packing house development will be a game changer for the city of Cambridge. It will be home to a synergistic mix of tech and creative entrepreneurs, food production, retail, and eatery spaces. It's a $23 million project. The park, which is the product of collaborative work between the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy and other partners, after 7 years of planning and fundraising, will be located adjacent to the former Phillips Packing Company. So once completed, the new park will not only provide more open space, will also play a significant role in revitalizing that particular part of Cambridge. And I had the opportunity to visit several years ago with a number of local officials. I couldn't be more impressed with the bold vision that Cambridge is embarking upon. And Governor, I'm proud to support the item. Look forward to visiting the project. Maybe we could go down and cut another
good
ribbon down there at some point, because it's a good news story.
That sounds good.
Secretary Ron, did you withdraw that item?
You withdrew this item?
Yes. 4RP?
We did.
Okay, wow. I just wanted to make sure for the record.
When did you do that?
When
just
I
just a minute, I thought I was just my own notes down. Yep. Just literally when, said it. I mean,
yeah, when I was introducing the items for the board.
Why have you withdrawn it?
I have no idea.
Let's get it back on.
Yeah. It looks from the item like it was withdrawn at last meeting as well and came back this meeting and now it's being withdrawn at this meeting.
Let's figure out what the issue is here, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely, thank you.
This is such a great thing, according to the council. He and I are going down there to cut the ribbon.
It would be a pretty lonely visit.
Yeah. Yeah, like, oops, didn't get approved.
Good morning, members of the board. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, administrator for MDOT State Highway. That particular item, Mr. Comptroller, so you're referring to the Phillips Packing House, which the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy group
yes.
is working on. Katie is doing an amazing job down there, and she continues to do a great work. The item that we pulled was actually associated with the shopping center on Route 50, which is the Walmart, which is also called the Marketplace, so it's somewhat different, but they're somewhat related in many ways. We had a couple of questions that we wanted to answer before we brought that back to the board, just to make sure that we did our due diligence. So
I have complete confidence in you.
So the shopping center is adjacent to the old Phillips
yes.
packing place.
Yes.
Okay.
So there, and the park is adjacent. The park is there also.
Yeah.
So
great work. I was there when they started the activities. We did a nice tour. And
yeah. Thank you.
So we are withdrawing it because we wanted to do some more due diligence and
well, blah, blah, blah. They withdrew it so they could spend more time talking to the comptroller about interest in the project. Any other questions on transportation? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second, 3-0. Move to Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I am Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. Today we have 36 items on our department agenda for the Office of State Procurement. Item 36 is a supplemental. Before taking any questions, I think I speak for my colleagues when we say that we believe we have the best boss in Maryland.
Well, what do you need?
Happy Boss's Day to
Boss's Day.
And the rest of the board, Madam Treasurer.
You're the first one I did not know it was Boss's Day.
It is Boss's Day, and they elected me to speak for to say Happy Boss's Day.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. I hope everybody in your department is wishing you a Happy Boss's Day.
I hope so, too. We're happy to take any questions you have.
I'm going to ask you tough questions. I just want to bring up item 8IT, and I just want to say that I'm happy to see this item before the board to build the Georgia Avenue Communications Tower. You know, this area of Montgomery County unquestionably needs coverage for state and county public safety communications. Montgomery County's outdated communication system obviously has experienced lengthy outages, including a 14-hour stretch during a busy weekend when the firefighters raised major concerns that it caused grave risk of catastrophic failure. I appreciate the fact that the Montgomery County Council voted unanimously to approve a capital budget to push this forward, and I think they've got the executive now on board with that as well, and we're happy that this new telecommunications network replacement will be moving forward and is scheduled to be in place by December of 2020. So I just wanted to point that out. I don't have any questions. Anybody else have questions?
Yeah. I have an item 27 for the National Aquarium, a $2 million grant for their new animal care and rescue center and critical infrastructure. I'll be heading to the National Aquarium later today. I can't overstate the invaluable role that that plays. I think Ryan Fredrickson, the Director of Government Affairs, may be here. Maybe he could give us a very brief summary of what exactly you're spending the money on.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I am Ryan Fredrickson, the Director of Government Affairs at the National Aquarium. First, I'd like to thank the support for their support of the aquarium over the years. As you know, the National Aquarium received $2 million in fiscal year 2020. The first $1 million will be to support our Animal Care and Rescue Center, which is what we call the aquarium behind the aquarium. It provides us space to perform essential tasks like animal quarantine, exhibit fabrication, and houses our seal rescue program. We designed the facility to be public-facing. It houses education programs, community meetings, and regularly scheduled public tours. The funding will complete the stage $3 million commitment to the $20 million project. Second $1 million will be to address critical infrastructure needs at the aquarium. As our facilities age, we want to preserve our world-class experience. And this funding will allow us to repair the glazing in one of our 40-year-old original glass pyramids above the Harbor Overlook Room and the glazing system in the Harbor View Room. And we are incredibly appreciative of the state's support. Without it, these projects would not be possible.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you coming. I support the item, Mr. Comptroller. My only concern is this is my 4 grandkids' favorite investment in state government, and you're going to be there today, and I'm not. When they see that post on Facebook, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for not bringing them to the aquarium. So
we'll keep
you.
It on the down low. Yeah. We'll, but I do want to add that I know the governor has pitched in and tried to help the city on their public safety. What happened over the weekend up there is just unbelievably damaging to the state's economy. And I'm not a public safety expert, but I say often, no public safety in Baltimore City, no economy. So whoever, and I know you're obviously all attuned to this down in the Inner Harbor, but in addition to the governor's leadership, I hope folks up there are doing something, because we should be a go-to city for millennials. They should be swarming all over Baltimore City because it's so much cheaper than Washington, but they aren't coming. Some are. I'm not saying it's wrong, but we should be the new mecca for young entrepreneurial millennials. And instead, you know, we have 300, 350 homicides a year. We have, on Saturday alone, 15 shootings, one of them a two-year-old toddler in a road rage incident. So whatever it is, whoever it is in charge up there in the city, needs to do something yesterday. And this is, I just cannot emphasize how much an economic priority the public safety situation in Baltimore City is.
Peter, Tom, you might want to mention yesterday, Annabon.
Yes, where I'm stealing some lines from Annabon Basu, who gives this very entertaining global, national, and state.
To the board
yeah, he's speaking to the chairman. Go ahead, Nancy.
No. And said that the number one concern of people moving in or moving out in terms of the economic development of the state, this is not mine, this is his, was the crime in Baltimore City.
I mean, we have more murders in Baltimore City than they do in New York, which has 13 or 14 times the population. I'm not talking per capita. I'm talking about actual homicides. So all hands on deck. This is, I mean, it's frightening because the weekend apparently was record-setting in a bad category.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Couldn't agree with all of this anymore with all those comments. I don't think we should take it out on the aquarium, though. The fish were not committing any of those crimes.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions on the DGS agenda?
Could I just take the advantage of having number 16 here, Department of Disabilities moving in to 217 Redwood, because I have the secretary here. As you know, there are other agencies already in Redwood Tower and DJ. There have been problems with HVAC, with heating, with a number of things. I hope you will look into it or have your people look into it. Now that the state is going to be, I believe, a major tenant in that building.
As a part of our process, when looking at a lease, as a matter of fact, our compliance division and our arms review the buildings and compile this to be able to engage in a conversation.
Well, with something to look at the days that people had to go home because of either heat or cold.
Well, I do thank you for that, but we'll go back and talk with our compliance unit to see what has come into our office to be able to potentially address that.
Okay. Any other questions on DGS?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Thank you. That concludes the board's office.
Thank you.